So far, Craig, we've got about 7 people on the line.
Okay.
Hi, who just joined? Who just joined the teleconference?
James Hufford.
James, welcome, James. Both Alan and Art are here, along with about 5 of the rest of us. Mm-hmm.
Good.
Great.
We'll wait about one more minute, and then Craig can go ahead and get everybody's name. If you want to, if we want to give him a preliminary list right now, so we can save him some time later. So far, we've got myself, Craig, Art Olivier, Alan Reese, James Hufford, Paul Zaremka, Ned Delaney. Who did I leave out?
Dwayne Dietz.
Dwayne Dietz is here also. Thank you, Dwayne. I think we'll go ahead and get started with who we got then. If you want to just double check the roll there and make sure we got everybody, we can get started.
Yeah, I'll read who I've got, and then I'm sure. Sounds like it's exactly what you just read, but. Paul Zaremka, Dwayne Dietz, Ken Freeland, Craig McKee, James Hufford, Alan Reese, Art Olivier, Ned Delaney. Did I get everybody?
I'm guessing you did. I don't hear any objections.
Okay. That's good.
Okay, just give me 1 second here to pull up the draft agenda. Hi, who just joined the teleconference?
Robin Horton.
Welcome, Robin.
Thanks.
Okay. The first thing we always do is, after taking the roll, which we've just done, is approving the previous teleconference minutes as amended. Appended to the draft agenda, but as originally sent out by Craig. I think I sent out an earlier version, unfortunately. So we're going to
the version
Are there any amendments to those minutes?
Yes, there would be. Amendments to the one that went out, you mean, right? Or
the ones that you sent out. Yeah.
Okay, the one that I sent out should be up to date. I just want to make sure because the one that came with the agenda didn't include Dwayne's abstention from the consensus letter discussion.
Right.
So as long as that's in there, then I think we're okay.
I'd also like to propose this amendment to the minutes, Craig, that in the title here you got correct regarding the removal of Mr. Mazarlian, but in the text you said that he'd be asked to, where the motion was actually that he'd be removed, so if you could change the language to that, I'd appreciate it.
Sorry, if you have correct
from being asked to leave to being removed, okay?
Being removed, okay.
Okay.
Sure.
Any objections to that amendment? If not, then we'll take the minutes as approved as sent out and move on to today's draft agenda.
I'm glad you didn't use the word terminated.
Well, we're not going down there. with extreme prejudice, right?
Right.
Boy, that would have been true. Okay. So, let's see. Today's draft agenda was pretty short. And to the point, does anybody have any amendments to it?
Yeah, Craig. At the end.
I'm sorry?
Robin Horden with a proposal after
Robin.
The subject, yes.
Go ahead, Robin.
Yes, I would like to include a discussion of discussion or presentation of the role of Israel in current and future 9/11 truth discussions and presentations.
Okay. How many minutes would you like to have devoted to that?
5.
Okay. So short discussion on the role of Israel in future presentations, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. One moment, please. Okay. I would like to also request that we have a brief discussion about the recent 9/11 Revisited International Conference in Kuala Lumpur and the potential effects of that conference. Any objections to that? Okay, then we'll have another focused discussion.
I have one to add as well.
Go ahead, Chris.
Just more of a report, I guess, on what the response I got from Elizabeth Woodworth about the letter that we agreed to send her before.
Follow up from Woodworth,
yeah.
Then?
Yeah, I mean, if that proposal comes out of it, you know, I haven't written up anything, you know, to have voted on, but I mean, at least I'll report it, and then maybe somebody will propose something, or I will.
Okay, I'll put that up near the top, because that's actually old business and should really be taken up first. Before these other two, anyway. And finally, if Ron Avery does show up tonight, I did invite him to the call. I'd like a brief opportunity to introduce him and give him an opportunity to do a little Q&A about his videos. Okay? But he's not here yet, so I'm guessing he probably won't make it. Okay, so our guest of honor tonight, I want to welcome and thank James Alfred for doing the legwork to invite them. But these two guys, as everyone I think on this call knows, have produced the most outstanding 9/11 truth dramatic version of anything that's been put out yet. And they're going to give us a brief presentation on their work and on the difficulty they've had with respect to getting it distributed and some idea of what we can do to help promote it. So I'd like to introduce, I'm sorry.
Before you start, this is Alan Reese.
Yeah.
I've been helping to promote Art's film in the Bay Area. I'm not his publicist, okay.
Oh, you're not his publicist. Okay, I got the wrong impression from James on that.
Art has his own publicist, but I am promoting the film as much as I can. And
great. Well, you can maybe give us some pointers then on how we might emulate your example. Okay.
You should go ahead and start with Art. It's his film. I had nothing to do with making it. He gets total credit for the whole thing.
Absolutely. And so, with no further ado, welcome again, Art. And anything you'd like to tell us about the film and your current challenges, we'd be very interested to hear what you had to say.
Sure, thanks. Well, I knew all along that I wasn't going to get distribution in the United States. You know, with the topic and, you know, the nature of the movie, they're just not going to allow major distribution. I have submitted to a lot of foreign film festivals and, you know, got a lot of good contacts in foreign countries, but I knew that United States, that was a really long shot at getting distribution. What I did hope for, though, was to be able to advertise on Alex Jones's networks, you know, Prison Planet and his radio show and InfoWars, but they don't allow me to advertise there. So that was a that was an unexpected roadblock that I'm not allowed to advertise on anything to do with Alex Jones's network.
Wow, that's amazing.
Can you explain why? What his reasons are for that?
No, he won't respond. I sent them very early on. I sent them a screener of the movie. You know, they asked for to look at the movie, and so I sent it to them. They said, "Oh, the one you sent didn't work. Send us another one." I say, "All right, okay, send them another one," and they were able to watch that. And they won't. From then on, they would not respond to any of our calls, emails. People that have advertised with them in the past and try to contact them. No one can get any response out of them at all on why they won't allow me to give them money to advertise on their on their website. So I have no idea.
Wow.
Well, I have I just started advertising on freedomsphoenix.com and then also on rents.com. It hasn't been all that successful, you know, with the amount of orders I'm getting from those. Hopefully, I'll be able to break even on the advertising cost on that stuff. But so I haven't done real well on advertising. The best thing that, you know, we've done, of course, is just when I do radio shows, and then there are a few people around the country that have been promoting it. Of course, Alan's been my number one promoter up here in Northern California. And that's, we've had some success with that. And I think that what Alan is doing next week is a really great blueprint for success to reach people that have no idea about 9/11. Alan can talk a little bit about what he's doing up there, but I think it's going to work out really well.
Have you been on Kevin Burr yet?
Yeah, I've been on his show 2 or 3 times now, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Then let's see.
About the George Norrie show? George Norrie show? I don't listen to it, but I heard it's pretty good. George Norrie?
Yeah, we've tried to get on there, but with no success. And I looked at advertising on the show. It was if I do nationwide advertising, it was way out of my budget. And I did advertise on his show when we had a showing in Fresno. So it was just a local Fresno ad that I ran. We didn't really get anything out of that, so it didn't
this
seem to
be an interview.
Yeah, to get interviewed. Yeah, we tried to get on with him for an interview, but we didn't get any success with that at all.
I don't know how it works with No Lights Radio, but have you let them know about your film yet and see if there's any way they can get you plugged?
Yeah, that's I am No Lights Radio. That's me, Alan Reese.
Ah, well, good to meet you, Alan. I've been a real fan of No Lights Radio for a long time, so I guess that's taken care of then.
He said Art's been interviewed on one of Kevin Barrett's shows, as on our radio, the Kevin Barrett show, and I think was interviewed by Kevin Barrett on his other radio shows too.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been trying to schedule other interviews for Art too. He had a radio appearance on Project Censored, which we carry, and also KPFA, the local Pacifica station carries. We're trying to arrange an interview with him for Guns and Butter with KPFA.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, that's a great show too.
Right. Maybe I'll say a few things about what we've been doing. And I would say that the number one thing that you guys as 9/11 Truth Grassroots Movement can do is to try to get people to purchase the film from Art's website. I think that's the most important thing at this time. If you have, like, own websites, maybe you guys can give a promotional ad or something on your website with a link to his website for people to purchase the film. It needs to get out everywhere. that they can't, that most people are not going to be able to see this film in a theater because it's been banned from theaters, okay? So the only showing would be like what we have done, and we're hoping that you guys as 9/11 Truth leaders will do also, is to organize events in your area, maybe with your groups or local college groups, in order to do a showing of the film. And what we've done on that has been pretty successful. The first one we organized was in Berkeley, local Unitarian Church Fellowship Hall, and quite a few people came up. And I'm a member of the local 9/11 Truth Group, and we worked with them and also with the Unitarian Church. So basically, the event was sponsored by the Social Justice Committee at the Unitarian Church, which got us the hall for free. Okay, and then also the 9/11 Truth Group in the area supported it, which got a lot of people to come. So our next event we're doing at a local junior college, Diablo Valley Junior College in Pleasant Hill, California. That's going to be in a week now, on December 6th, on Thursday evening. That one, I have some volunteers for No Lies Radio who are also students, and one of them were our students at that college. So, and they were members of the Students for Democratic Society. So Students for Democratic Society is sponsoring this film at Diablo Valley College. And they're doing promotion on campus to get students and to come, putting out flyers and approaching professors to try to get them to recommend that their students come to this event. And the way we phrase the event is to make it into an educational event, and that's what we did in Berkeley too. We show arts film, and then afterwards we have question and answers. 9/11 truth experts in Berkeley. Who came was Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and Art were on the stage after the film to answer questions from the audience, and that was extremely popular. In the event that we're going to do in at the junior college next week, we're also going to have Art's going to be on stage, and also Richard Gage, also Ken Jenkins. He's a 9/11 filmmaker, if you don't know him.
Yeah, and I've got a long working relationship with Ken Jenkins.
Right, and it's going to be another question and answer period after the film, and then we're promoting it to the professors and to the college as an educational event. So even those professors in the architecture department, which we've approached, if they don't believe in the theory of controlled demolition, they can send their students to debate it, you know, with the proponents at the event. So and that also creates some controversy too. So it's, and we're promoting it as both as entertainment and as education. So you can get your and also you can arts film is something that you could take your wife or your girlfriend to, who hates that you even talk about 9/11 because you talk about it so much. But you can take your friends and your relatives your significant other to this movie, or recommend it to them, or even give it to them for Christmas, because it's not a documentary. You know, it's something that they probably would enjoy as entertainment. So, and it also gets the ball rolling for questions and answers. At the Diablo Valley College one, we're going to, in addition to in showing the films and having questions and answers, we're going to be showing the 15-minute short by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth on WTC7 that's narrated by Ed Asner. So we're going to start it off with, you know, a documentary on what happened to Building 7, then go into arts film, and then go into question and answers. So that's how we're approaching it. I would recommend that approach to this group too. If most students at your local colleges, and if you can do that, you can probably get a big hall, a theater for free, then upload it, and you can go from there. I don't know whether you can get Art to go around the country for those things, but I mean there are ways for you to, if you have the right audiovisual people, you can actually Skype Art in onto a big screen and he can answer questions from the big screen. You could, you know, Skype Richard Gage in or other 9/11 truth leaders, or have your own 9/11 truth leaders lead the discussion after the film. So that's basically what I have to say on the subject.
I see on your list of people that are invited to this meeting here is Ben Collette. I don't think he's on the line right now, right? Is Ben here?
No, he's not.
Okay.
He doesn't typically show up, no.
Okay. Well, anyway, what he's doing is going to be promoting it in Seattle. So what he did is we have a package deal for people, for promoters, and he's going to go out and he's going to rent a movie theater and he's going to charge, you know, whatever, 10, 12 bucks, whatever, for people to come to see it. So what he did is he bought 15 of my DVDs, and then we sent him 20 DVDs, a Blu-ray, because when you show it on a really big screen, a Blu-ray looks much better. We gave him 100 postcards, the artwork for the poster, and then you know, the rights to have a one commercial showing of the movie. So you know, hopefully he'll be able to break even or make a little bit of money on the event up there in Seattle. And that's available to anybody else that would like to do a commercial venture.
Cool. Question for Alan.
Sure.
Although I think probably the PBS station in Denver, is it KQED? I'm not sure of the call signs, that Gage just posted explosive evidence on. I'm pretty sure they just got their hands slapped pretty bad. But have you approached them? They seem to be a very open, have done press for truth and...
Actually, that's happening as we speak. Richard Gage is going to be making an approach to them.
Great.
Paul Zaremka, you got a question or a comment?
I should clarify. Richard Gage is not doing it as an official of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, but just privately, he's going to mention Art's film to the people at PBS there.
Okay. I hope you guys follow up.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we do.
Hi, this is Paul.
All right.
Yeah, I just have, either for Art or Alan, I just have a comment here. The minutes of this teleconference goes out to a large list of people, much more than actually participate. So I think we ought to do two things. First of all, remind people what your website is to find out what, you know, where to go to purchase the film. But secondly, if you could give us, like, I mean, right now, I mean, some kind of summary of the high points of the film. I mean, what truthers would like to know about, to know why it would be a great thing to show around the country to the best
sure.
of our ability.
Sure, yeah. The website is operationterror.com.
One second. And, Craig, I think you should watch this for putting it into minutes.
Absolutely. I'm writing it down, yes.
Okay. The movie starts 2 years before 9/11. A CIA agent gets an assignment from somebody from the council. The council is kind of a mix between Project for a New American Century and the Council on Foreign Relations. So he gets an assignment to run an operation to blow up the Twin Towers and make it look like it was an attack by Muslim terrorists. As he goes through and assembles the patsies for the operation, and, you know, gets all the demolition experts and the flight engineers to help him with the plot, he runs across a couple of obstacles. One of them is the Army's program called Able Danger, And so he has that obstacle to go in, and he has to personally raid Orion Scientific, which is the contractor for Able Danger, and shut down that program. And then later on in the movie, he then is finds out that they arrested Zacharias Moustawi in Minnesota, even though the radical fundamentalist group told them not to do that. They arrested him anyway, and so he has to intervene there, and the radical fundamentalist group of the FBI makes sure that no one is able to look inside of Moustawi's laptop or put a undercover agent in Moustawi's jail cell. So as the operation goes on, there are a lot of mistakes that happen. And what we do during the part of the film where the one of our main characters is an engineer. It's we made a fictitious name of Graydon Castle, but he's an engineer for the avionics of the drones that are going to be used during 9/11. So on the actual day of 9/11, a lot of news reports come in, and our actors just go word for word from the actual news reports. We report on the empty field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The we have news report on from the BBC where they reported the collapse of the Solomon Brothers building 23 minutes in advance. We've got Rudy Giuliani saying that he was told that the World Trade Center was going to collapse. We got Barry Jennings talking about the explosions in Building 7. And then we also have the scene in the White House Emergency Operations Center. And that scene was pretty much written by Norm Mineta. I just took everything from his congressional testimony to some interviews that he did, talking about the stand down orders given by Cheney for the attack on the Pentagon and also the shoot down orders in Pennsylvania. And so the guy that's in charge of this whole operation near the end of the movie, of course, he believes that the entire operation has been compromised. It's just so obvious that there were so many mistakes that, you know, he just feels he really failed. But the head of the council assures him that he really served his country well in pulling off this operation, because, of course, the head of the council knows that he controls the media, and the media will spin it any way that he wants. So that's kind of the movie in a nutshell there.
Thank you.
Are you done, Paul?
Yes.
Thank you. Art, I have a question regarding one aspect of the plot there. I bought the movie, and I certainly want to encourage everybody that can possibly afford just $20 plus shipping to please get one, because we've got to help these guys recover their nut. But the part that I had a question about concerned the approach to the Pentagon and the claim that they missed. And I'm trying to understand exactly what was being implied by that they missed, that there was a plane that was intended to hit the Pentagon, but then it missed the Pentagon, or what was that supposed to be about?
Oh, no. When the engineer from the CIA, the first picture comes in, and there's just this tiny hole that obviously a 757 couldn't fit through. The engineer says, look, it hit too low. The second floor beam is still there. So he's just implying that whatever hit it too low and left the that beam there. That they should have hit it a little bit higher to blow up the second floor beam, so have more damage, so it would look more like an airplane strike.
Or whatever caused the damage, in other words.
In the movie, we talked about it early in. I don't know if you connect the dots, but very early in the movie, we talked about getting an A-3 Sky Warrior that would be able to shoot a missile first, and then the Sky Warrior would be able to follow the missile hole, you know, into the building. So that's kind of, you know, the theory that we use there.
Got it. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. That helps a lot.
Uh-huh.
Anybody else have any questions for Art about the film or about how
I have a couple of comments anyway.
James,
I just wanted to add before I forget. You know, if somebody does show the movie, to make sure that they watch the director's and writer's commentary at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I talk a little bit about you know, what was real, what was made up, and what we know and what we don't really know. And then of course Paul Cross, the director, talks more about the making of the movie and you know, some of the obstacles that we had going through with the production.
You're saying for the activists to watch that part, right?
Right, yeah, because if you do show it to other people, you know, they may have questions and like, how can they show that? That's not true, you know, and it's just, you know, you can kind of, you know, hear right from my mouth on why we did what we did.
Right, I watched that first before I watched the movie, and I was glad I did.
It really
helped me explain to my mother, who also watched it. Okay, who else? James, you had some comments.
Yeah, it's a little off the wall, but one idea that on the theory that what goes around comes around is that, if you recall, somehow or other the Italian filmmakers of 9/11 Zero got their film shown nationwide on national TV in Russia. And if possibly you could contact those people and find out how they did that, maybe get some help and contacts, maybe you could get that done there too. That might be
him. Yeah, that's a great idea. And actually, I have been in contact with him.
Super.
Yeah, he took my movie over, probably 4 or 5 months ago before it was released. And he took it over to Russia to the Russian producers that showed his movie, live on Russian TV and in prime time.
Great.
And they really liked the movie. They said, "Yeah, we want to do it, but Putin is coming back into power, and we'll have to see if it will be allowed to be shown on Russian TV."
Well, apparently
Putin didn't like the idea. So.
Well, and then my other suggestion is that if you could get somebody, I don't suppose he's available for this, but you never know, but somebody like Jimmy Walter and get him really in love with the film, maybe he could pay bounties to theaters to show it.
You know, I did contact him very early on, and I never did hear anything from him. He never contacted me back.
But, well, he's my friend on Facebook. I guess I could run it by him at least.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's make sure that he can watches the movie. And
I know he'll be thrilled to see it at least, and, you know, and he sees it.
Yeah, and it wouldn't really have to be like a donation from him or anything. It could be an investment from him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, to do the advertising and stuff like that we need. Because I spent everything that I had making the movie, so I really don't have the money that I really should have to promote it.
Well, I'm just thrilled to death at this film because it isn't a slap together effort at all. It appears to me, you know, just a really polished film. I don't know how you did much with $100,000 toward that, but
we spent a lot of money on locations. I had a big location budget because I really thought locations was important. Because I've seen other movies that just put you to sleep because the locations are so bad.
And so
I spent a lot on that, but my actors only got paid $75 a day.
Wow.
You know, because, you know, out here in L.A., you have a lot more actors than you have movies. So we screened, we went through probably close to 1,000 actors to narrow it down to the 75 that we used, plus the, we used another 50 extras. And when we got some really good talent, you know, because there's a lot of people out here that just want to get on
Absolutely.
You know, get their feet wet and get some credits. So,
yeah.
So we saved money on that. And then, of course, I did a lot of the work myself. I was, you know, the writer, the producer. But, you know, plus I was the guy, I was the prop man, and I built a set for the E4B. I used my house in some of the scenes. I was the guy in charge of the getting the food, you know. So, you know, we did a lot of our own work, and then Paul Cross, you know, he worked for Peanuts too, you know, because he really believed in the whole
wow.
movie, and so you know, we
did
got
to. Did you have
work.
Any connection at all with Severe Visibility, his earlier film?
Well, that's why I contacted him, because I had watched his movie,
uh-huh.
and I thought he did a good job in directing that movie, so. I contacted him to see if he would want to do this.
Great move.
Hitchhiking on James's suggestion there, Art, something else that you might consider is contacting RT Network and letting them know about this film. Even though they are sort of technically under Russian control, they're a little bit more independent, and they love anything that challenges the ruling narrative. So it's a real shot in the dark, but they might just be willing to help promote it for you.
Yeah, actually, we do. My publicist sends in all the press releases, but haven't had any luck with them yet.
Oh, okay.
Well, this is Ned. I have a technical question.
Go ahead, Ned.
Right. I have obtained a copy of the movie and started to watch the commentary, or the movie with commentary, and that played through fine. And I'm attempting to watch, in fact, I just sent you a letter, but in watching the movie proper, it gets into about 5 minutes into the movie and it just stops. Have you ever had anybody talk?
I had one guy that had a problem. He sent the movie back, and you know, I sent him a new one. And typically, it's the player, or sometimes there'll be a fingerprint on the movie. You can clean it with just alcohol. What you do is when you clean it, don't follow the grooves that are in the movie. Go from the inside of the movie and clean it outward. And I even had in one of my showings that it stopped because there was a fingerprint on the Blu-ray. So you know that happens. But if after cleaning it still doesn't work and your DVD cleaner, you know, just send it back. Just let me know and I'll just send out another one. You don't have to send it back. I just send out another one.
Okay, no problem. The case was within the question or within the letter I sent. The case was smashed, but the video disc appeared to be okay. But then when I
started, if the case was smashed, yeah, then perhaps it could be a little bit warped. So you need a new one. So just send an email and we'll get a new one out to you.
Okay, great. Good job.
Okay, any other comments or questions?
Craig, go ahead. Yeah, Art, I'm doing an interview with Paul about the film for my blog site, Truth and Shadows, which is mostly focuses mostly on 9/11. I'd like to know if you would be available to do one as well, and I can get both into the same article. Would you be available?
Yeah.
How would I contact you? Do you have an email I can get? Or?
Yeah, my email address is art@electart.com.
Elect Art?
Yeah, I'm also I was a politician. I was the mayor of my city here in Bellflower, California, and I was the Libertarian candidate for vice president against Dick Cheney. And then I ran for governor against Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay, great. Great, okay. Well, then I'll definitely be in touch then.
Okay, great.
Any other comments or questions for Art or Alan?
Yeah, this is Dwayne.
Uh-huh.
Art, is there any hint that any Israeli involvement might have been involved
in the movie? No, you know, my Paul says, you know, we got to keep, you got to keep it simple. You got to keep the number of villains small and the number of victims small. You know, I think I had over 100 actors in the original script, and he's like, oh, no. This is too complicated. People won't be able to follow it. It's going to cost too much money. We gotta trim it down. So we don't have anybody up, you know, no ISI, no Mossad, anything like that. It's just mainly the CIA is operating it, and plus with the help of the radical fundamentalist group. And then of course Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney is one of the villains.
This is Ned. Is Silverstein involved in the movie?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
So, if I may summarize the motives that are depicted in the film, it starts out being an attempt to improve the hegemonic situation of the United States in the oil areas of the world, and then there's a side plot of somebody's financial malfeasance that's going to be covered up in the offing. Is that about it?
Yeah, we start the movie when we roll in the credits. It's a video of, you don't even know what you're looking at, and then all of a sudden it kind of comes into focus that it's big oil derricks and oil pumps, and that's how we end the movie also. So it's
there is a side plot there toward the end, I think, in the Bohemian Grove where somebody's financial shenanigans are going to be covered.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, in the movie, it was just originally they were going to destroy the Twin Towers and the Pentagon, and then the SEC investigation was going on, and that was about the kickbacks for the IPOs, initial public offerings, and so that was an investigation that was going on prior to 9/11, and that implicated a lot of the big financial companies. So yeah, and so in the Bohemian Grove there, the head of the council, he decides that they're going to also take down Building 7, and then that all of the IPO investigation documentation will be inside of that building, and that building will be destroyed. Which actually happened. You know, the IPO investigations after 9/11 were all stopped, and the excuse was that they were destroyed in that building.
I'm really glad you threw that part in there. It really helps enrich the entry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments or questions for these guys? Hearing no other person wanting to speak, I'd just like to say this, that we've been talking for quite a long time, you know, about Cohen's film that was under production, and everybody was eager to make sure that it didn't pussyfoot too much and so forth and so on. And, of course, it's not going to be produced after all, it would seem, at least to the present time. But these guys didn't pussyfoot. They went right for the jugular, you know, so I think we owe them a debt of thanks for their forthrightness and their courage, and we really need to do whatever we can to help promote.
Well, I'd just like to add that I think that for a lot of people, I mean, we talk about scientific laws and things, and it doesn't really seem real to a lot of people. But when they see it on the screen, in real time, then it will seem real. I think it could. Mm-hmm. Make an awful lot of converts.
Yeah, I'd like to say one more thing. This is Alan Reese from No Eyes Radio again. I'm gonna send. If you guys are if anybody's planning on doing a promotion or so forth, I'm gonna send links to the group. If you could put them in the minutes too, as to how we are promoting it on our website,
mm-hmm.
And I give you guys ideas on how to promote it in your own little areas. Okay.
Thank you very much for that. We'll make sure to put that in the minutes if you'll send it to us. Do you have an email address to send it to?
Yeah, and also if there's members that are in the Bay Area, our event in Pleasant Hill is next Thursday evening at 7:00. So if you could mention that too, that might help our attendance. And I would also suggest that if you guys have, if any of you also do, you know, local events, that you promote it on your email list too when they're happening. So that's what I wanted to say.
And then if you do have an event, I'm always available to do radio interviews or TV interviews with the local media. Although when I did try to do, I had an event in Fresno that I promoted, and it was in the Fresno Bee. He ran a he did a the entertainment columnist there did a review of the movie. And we bought some ad time in some of the alternative newspapers. And then I had two TV interviews the night before the movie. But unfortunately, both of them canceled at the last minute without comment. Just couldn't do it. I mean, they both were very excited about doing the interviews for the movie and thought it was great. And then they both just canceled and just lost contact with them. So. That typically is something typical that happens once their bosses find out what the movie's about.
I hope the Project Censored takes up your cause too, because this is certainly a question of censorship.
Well, that's actually a good idea, and I haven't been able to get much enthusiasm from Project Censored. They're actually a show that we carry, and I've been helping them live stream their show. Because they say that fictional movies are not within their mission statement, so it's hard to get them to do anything. But they have promoted the film a bit, so it's not like they're completely ignoring it.
Robin Horton with a question.
Yes, hi, Robin.
I'm kind of curious what form the rejections. You say that it has been refused to be distributed. And I'm kind of curious if there is a pattern to that, or how did you come to know that it would not be distributed?
Well, I just kind of know how the media works, but I mean, my publicist has called just about every distributor in LA. I don't know, just no comment. And a lot of it has to do with the kind of money that I have to promote it, you know. And I don't have the money to promote it. Although I think that if it wasn't a controversial subject, that some of these other distributors would come through with the money to promote it. I just don't know, because I don't get any feedback at all from anybody. It's just like when I try to advertise with Alex Jones, I just can't say why he won't do it, because they won't talk to us. So that's typically what happens when they find out the subject. You just lose contact. They won't return emails or phone calls or anything. They just fall off the face of the earth. So we don't really get any kind of reasons why.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other comments or questions? And thank you both for coming. Art, we can only wish you the best, and we'll do what we can. I hope all of us to help promote it in our local areas and in our groups.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's an outstanding accomplishment and a true milestone for the 9/11 Truth Movement. Thank you very much for doing it.
All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, our next item on the agenda will be the follow-up on the letter to Elizabeth Woodward, right?
Right. If people recall from last month, we made an adjustment to the letter that had been proposed the month before, and I sent that off to Elizabeth Woodward and David Ray Griffin. Basically talking about the terminology that they use on their website and in their press releases that sort of assume certain things to be facts that are not agreed to be facts. And what I'll do is I've got a response here that I'll just read, I think. So this is from Elizabeth Woodworth. She says, thank you and the teleconference for your ongoing interest and support for the work of the 9/11 Consensus Panel. We have discussed the attack, in quotation marks, concern at considerable length and have nothing to add to what we have said in the past, although we still plan to create a page of definitions on the website. On the other two points, we remind you that when we are giving the official story in the first part of each consensus point, we tell the story from the administration's point of view. In our press releases to the media, we will continue to use the word alleged in referring to events that are not certain. However, in the first case you cite, the Pentagon clearly was struck by something. Regarding Flight 11 hitting the North Tower, the use of alleged in the media would likely raise more eyebrows than it would allay concerns among those who disagree. And I'm happy to reread that sentence later if anybody needs to have it reread, because I've had to read it a couple times. Additionally, the point in this case was about ATA's commuter flight and to raise the implied question as to whether Flight 11 did or did not hit the North Tower would introduce a distraction from the central line of thinking at hand. We are both very busy with other things at the moment, and we'll get to the definitions when time permits. Sincerely, Elizabeth Woodworth. Now, that she came back about the next day with a follow-up, a brief follow-up, and she says, dear Craig, after discussing my letter to you further, David and I agree that it could lead to misunderstandings to use the word struck in relation to the Pentagon, although we were using it in the sense that it received a blow. Thank you and the teleconference group for alerting us to this. Best wishes, Elizabeth. Well, but that was definitely David's. I think that was, making that point. So anyway, that's it. I personally don't find those answers satisfactory in the least. Although I'm pleased that the one point seems to have gotten through. The other points, I don't even. She says, in our press releases to the media, we will continue to use the word alleged. Well, I think part of the problem is that they aren't using the word alleged. So I don't know what she means by that. And the whole idea of in that the consensus points being from the administration's point of view, well, it's not clear at all. I mean, it's giving the official story, but then it's giving it based on fact that it takes as absolutely, unquestionable. And this is where the problem comes in. I mean, yes, we know they're summarizing the official story, but that's not the issue. The issue is that they're saying, and it's based on these facts. Well, we don't agree that those are facts. Many of us don't. So I don't find that terribly satisfactory. And the bit about Flight 11, I mean, this is really where I find it gets bizarre. Well, not bizarre, but I mean, I have a hard time with it. Regarding Flight 11 hitting the North Tower, the use of alleged in the media would likely raise more eyebrows than it would allay concerns among those who disagree. So, I mean, I'm not sure why we're concerned about it raising eyebrows and why we want to allay concerns in the media. I'm not sure about either of those things. And also the idea that to mention it would to introduce a distraction from the central line of thinking at hand. I find that whole thing just baffling. So those are my impressions. I mean, I'm glad that the one point got through. And her comment that, we've already said enough about the word attacks, well, they haven't really, because she wrote me a personal email where she kind of went into some detail about why they didn't want to change that. But the answer to the teleconference didn't really answer it. So, to say that she's sort of dealt with it enough, I mean, I know where they stand, and basically she's saying that they think attack, is valid. It's neutral enough, is what they feel. Yep. So I guess I'll leave it there and let see if anybody has any thoughts about whether it should be just left, like we made our point and that's it, or if anything should be followed up.
Okay. Who would like to make a comment?
Robin.
Robin, who else? Okay, I'll put Robin and Paul. Who, anybody else? All right, I'll put myself behind Paul. Go ahead, Robin.
What I'm finding out as things are moving ahead is that more and more often things that were, let's use roughly use the word alleged, are indeed, because of the repetitive nature, becoming an established fact, which, you know, I don't particularly agree with, but this is the reality at hand. And in my particular focus, I'm very perturbed that almost everybody who is into the idea that an air vehicle struck the Pentagon and that the target that popped back up on radar was American 77, when we have no hard proof of that, I beat my head against the wall saying we just, you know, have to say either alleged or purported to be American 77 or whatever. So I'm not really sure how much energy we should use or consternation we should hold, you know, regarding some of these things that kind of go from questionable sort of to accepted mainstream stuff. I almost kind of think that the next tactic, and this is my first thinking about this, maybe the next round of tactics should be to kind of accept that one way or another we're going to get some hardened perceptions, and for us to change it, then we have to just, as we develop new information, if other evidence comes to bear, then we have to talk about the issue then. Again, I'm not set in stone on this. I'm just sharing sort of a frustration, but I really kind of don't want to spend an awful lot of my time arguing some of these particular points. That's all.
Okay. All right, Paul.
Yeah, I just wanted to say we can just leave it alone. I mean, we're not going to make any further progress. The only thought I did have as we were discussing the word alleged is that there's other words that could be used so that it doesn't get monotonous. For example, you could say the government asserts, and people already know that the word asserts doesn't mean it's true. You know, there's things that could be done, but you have to have the willpower to do it, and I don't think they really have the willpower. That's why I think we should just leave it alone.
Okay. Well, I'd like to make, I think, two or three different points here. The first one has to do with the semantics of the word struck. I personally felt a little bit the way that Elizabeth actually seems to feel about it, that it is a more neutral term than what they were using before they used the word struck, and could be interpreted in different ways. But I realize that Craig does not interpret it that way, and so I'm sure there are others also who believe the word struck implies that something was hit by something else. So I can understand the controversy there, but I don't particularly share the urgency of that particular point. The sentence that Craig talked about reading several times, what I believe she's saying there is that it would raise more eyebrows among the uninformed or the people outside the movement than it would allay concerns within the movement, I believe is what she's trying to say there. Whether or not we agree that that's a valid point, I think it's important to understand what she's probably trying to say there. And finally, I think I'm trying to remember what it was that she said in her last repost, Craig, that you just reminded us about the last article that she sent you, or the last word she sent you. What was that about?
You mean the follow-up?
No.
That's what you mean? Well, that was just basically saying that they changed their mind about struck, and then they were going to they realized that it was misleading and that they were going to change it.
Okay, I think that would. All right. Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, we definitely raised some consciousness there, and that's a good thing. This is all about semantics and about narrative and about fall and about who gets to frame the verbiage within which we discuss these matters. I think somebody's got to really do a study of this. You know, I mean, a serious study about how this all works and present it, and then ask them to take a look at it, because it's a larger issue than just this word or that word. It's really a question of who gets to frame the narrative and how we feed into that or not. And I'm afraid by just fighting these battles, we're not going to win the war with them. That's my thought. Anyway. Okay. Who else? Anybody else on this?
Yeah, Craig, I just a quick little response, I guess. I mean, the consensus panel sort of puts itself up as being sort of like offering a historical record to a point. So it's a resource. It's something that journalists can look at to kind of get a set of points that have gone through an evaluation process. So it's more than just, I mean, anybody can offer their opinion and anybody can say, depending on what's struck or not struck, but it's when they're sort of putting themselves in the position of being like a historical, you know, the panel of record. Then I think that it's really important. To me, the fixes for these things are so easy that, you know, when we say like, well, is it worth the effort? I agree. I mean, I'm quite in agreement with Paul. There's probably no point. It is worth doing. Whether it's pointless because we're not going to get anywhere, that's fine. But these words are important because they do become, as Robin said, through repetition, they become accepted as the way we look at these things. And the only way we're going to challenge the way people look at it is to like not use the same old wording that just kind of reinforces, you know, what we're trying to. It just makes our work more difficult, in my opinion. So.
This is James. I think that what we've done in that direction up until now has been good. It's good to keep them on their toes, because if they're gonna put themselves out as basically the Vatican making pronouncements and so on, deciding things, you know, maybe others can disagree, but in their eyes anyway. What they say is the controlling law. If they're going to do that, well, we'd better try to keep them on their toes, I think, and correct whatever needs to be corrected.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they were mentioned, of course, in passing at the Kuala Lumpur conference as a reference point. So I think, you know, the fact that they've gained the credibility they've gained by simply being there and claiming to be what they're claiming to be means that they have some accountability to the movement.
Yep.
But I certainly don't have any problem in disagreeing with them when I disagree with them.
Well, that's because you're excommunicated.
Well, that may be. That may be. I'm beyond the pale.
Okay. Any other comments on this? Any suggestions for further follow up, or shall we move on to another item? Okay. Let's leave that there for now. It's a matter of continuing concern, and move on to the role of Israel in future presentations.
Yeah, this is Rob, and I and Ken. This is messaging in here for you for the little DVD project we're on too. I'm just sort of go along. When I do my activism in the street out here in the Pacific Northwest, anyways, I'm finding out that when I raise questions about Israel's role in 9/11, I find the ears and eyes of the people much more open, because I think a lot of people have some political
concerns about Israel's role in this country. The same message can be given in the negative, which is, one of the presentations that I make out in the street is I'm doing Gage's last film, the explosive evidence one. And the way that I look at that is that that film, that DVD, decouples Islam from the 9/11 attack. So another way that I can approach the public is to say that. I say, you know, Islam didn't blow up the buildings, okay? Didn't destroy the WTCs. I don't get as warm and open a reception about that because I think that the powers to be have, and Hollywood have, put into place over decades Islamophobia and a fear. So I'm finding it very interesting. And I sort of am either looking for information or putting some seeds in people's minds to say, you know, I can't remember Anthony's last name, but he's Australian, and he feels now, I'm on his list, and I just, his name has slipped my mind. His point of view is that anybody who does not include some reference to the Mossad, Israel dancing Israelis, and Israel's role in whatever it is that they do and report about 9/11 might be considered to be not telling the truth. So, or covering up for Israel. And obviously we know that's part of the reason that the products out of Hollywood have been undermined, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and why we'll never get a good hearing on Manhattan. So what I'm discovering is that there is an openness in the general public to make them more curious and open to receiving my handed out DVD when I question Israel. So I think that not only is this pertinent to the case, and I think more truthful, and I've read Boland's book, and I'm not endorsing any particular thing, but the whole dancing Israeli issue, it's impossible to make go away. So I sort of think, as I've said before, that this is the decade of in fact, you know, correlating Israel and 9/11, not saying that there's a blame or whatever, but there's a relationship here. I think that that's a positive way to move ahead, even though obviously we're going to have a minority of people in the country, unfortunately, who have very high power, really squirming and squeaking and doing what they can to beat this back. And I will give it an evidence because I've worked with PBS stations before and I know exactly the character of the people who volunteer and who will run it. And I just cannot tell you how that the Denver 9/11 guys got, you know, explosive evidence out on a PBS station. It was awesome. But that's because the Jewish influence in Denver is very small. So that's just what I want to kind of keep putting on the table. And now, Ken, this is for you. Ken Jenkins is finally freed up and has agreed to sort of put his arms around the DVD project that you and I started. And I just thank you so much for the help. I'm such a phobe here. And this is where I'm now taking and kind of making a DVD compilation that I hand out to people, and I'm up to like 800 or 900 now. But in any event, Ken Jenkins and I are, and Ken Freeland and I started out this project, and the core of the DVD is going to be now the one-hour version of Explosive Evidence Experts Speak Out, but it is led by what I will term as the Bowman 3 minutes, which includes Larry Silverstein, because I feel that Gage was wrong in editing that out. Then I have the one-hour explosive evidence, Experts Speak Out. Then I have a really nice choice that actually Ken Freeland just pulled out about the dancing Israelis. So boy, it's just a perfect piece. Mm-hmm. And then we wrap up with the anthrax attacks. And this is not to be an entertainment thing, which is the film we talked about earlier. This is more of a citizenship thing. And the reason I'm mentioning this to inform Ken Freeland here, but also to tie into the fact that we have something going for us that too many people are afraid to scratch the surface of. And, you know, the intense control of a lot of the media and mindsets and entertainment are controlled basically in the northeast part of the United States, from Washington, D.C. to Boston, and then in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in the middle and all over the other place, there's a whole bunch of people who are the people we want to reach with what we know about 9/11, and they are not happy about Israel's role in this country and elsewhere. So that's my pitch. I'm just putting it on the table saying, I think if we're going to be seeking the truth, we have to deal with everything. The book 500 Days, the relationship between the FBI and the CIA. Aidan Monahan's just came out with a really nice book talking about some of the technical navigational aspects of the two flights into the World Trade Centers. Mark Gaffney's come out with a book talking about basically black ops and deep money. And then I think that Kevin Ryan's work, seen and written on Blogger, about, I think it's Louis Free, I think that's the Ivy League stooge who was put into the FBI role, is a brilliant piece. And so I think a lot of good things are happening, and that if we move as a movement ahead and we continue to basically hide Dean and the dancing Israelis, I just think we're, A, missing an opportunity, and I don't think we're being honest, and I don't think we are truth-seeking. So I'm mentioning this to this group because I want to stimulate thought and opinion, because I'm just doing what I do. I'm always interested in learning. Thanks for your time.
Robin, I think you're on to something, and I'd like to ask you, would you accept a donation of a couple of hundred snazzy 9/11 investigate buttons to pass out?
Sure.
Well,
yeah, no, I'm out.
If you get me your mailing address, I'll mail them to you.
Okay. It is.
James.
Yeah, James. It's 2-7-3-8-8 Woodside Road.
2-7-3-8-8
And then one word, Woodside.
Woodside.
Road.
Road.
Northeast, N-E.
Mm-hmm.
In Kingston, as you would spell it.
Mm-hmm.
Washington.
Okay.
And it's 98346.
98346.
And if anybody wants to help me out in other ways, I appreciate this very much. Just blank DVDs. I just copy them when I'm watching news and doing stuff, and just copy them and put them together. That's my biggest expense in this, and it's going quite well. And I've devised a very interesting strategy, and I'm personally trying to get the 11th of the month back up and running. Somebody to get back out into the streets. When I do my little traveling here and there, I always have a little handful of the DVDs and some push pins. And if I'm at a coffee shop or at a place or a convenience store, I'll put free DVD. It says free DVD, you know, and I identify what the DVD is. And I'll put it up there with a pin, through two or three of them.
Yeah.
And then a week later, I come back, they're all gone, man. I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
So we may not be able to hit the movie theaters, but we can hit people's home movie theaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Paul on the stack. Paul, and then anybody else?
All right, I'm behind Paul. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, Robin, I want to make a correction to your own language, which is in the spirit of correcting anybody else's language. When you said you made a reference to the Jewish influence in Denver, I don't think that's good language. I think it should be something like Israeli state influence or something like that, because it's not a person's religion that's the issue here.
That's a good point. Usually I use the word Zionist. I slipped up.
Well, I don't like that 100% either, but that's a more complicated discussion.
I know.
I like to use something that's parallel to talking about any state, American state, Canadian
right.
state.
Oh, your point is well taken.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is Ken. I'm going to actually challenge what Paul said there a little bit. From watching the Kuala Lumpur video, from what I was able to watch there, it was very surprising the extent to which this question came up in the course of their discourse. The first one was when Cynthia McKinney was talking about her oppression, her political opposition, and how every time she tried to raise the issue of 9/11, it was the Israeli lobbyist folks that gave her a hard time. Okay. That's something to really dwell on. The second thing is the very long speech given by a dignitary from Malaysia, whose name I do not know. He's a military fellow in politics, and I don't know his name, but he's quite well-spoken. And he gave a very long dissertation on the, I'm going to use the word Jewish here, control of American politics. He was breaking it down by state and showing how a small minority of Jewish pro-Israel voters are able to sway elections due to the fact that the majority of the population are politically divided in more abstract political ways. You can take or leave his conclusion, but he did use the word Jewish. He wasn't talking about Israel, although it is relevant, of course, to Israel in the sense that these are people who support Israel and try to push American foreign policy in the direction of Israel, but they happen to be Jewish voters. So he was actually using that, I think, as a way of showing us in the 9/11 Truth Movement how, if we really wanted to, we could learn to help manipulate elections.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of an interesting case in point. But I really would encourage all of you, well, I'm getting ahead of myself because that's the next item on the agenda, so I'll hush up for now. Okay.
This is Robin. If I would just wrap up to both of those. Paul makes a point because it's so easy in this country to be labeled an anti-Semite. Mm-hmm. So the word Jewish American is really... let's call it a vivid word. And I kind of use that here because I'm not out in the public. As I said before, I generally simply use the word Zionist that gets everybody on the same side because the majority of Jewish Americans aren't happy at all about Zionists.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a political maven. And Ken, what you just said is exactly how the United States government has been managed by a minority, and the plurality, even though some of you might be libertarians, the plurality of people in this country hold progressive values between 60 and 70%. Almost two-thirds of the country hold progressive values, and when they are asked about these values, they express them, but as soon as the term Democratic Party, Republican Party is put into the question asked of them, they change. There was a lot of consulting and consultants and political parties consultants that are really hired out of Washington, D.C., and I will tell you point blank what their objective is. Their objective is to take any plurality and make it into a 50-50 split so that a small cadre can indeed swing the Congress, swing the Senate, and swing elections. There is no doubt about this. So, Ken, you know, if I could magnify that a million times, I would.
Well, I thought it was an incredible insight on this guy's part. Now, this guy's not an American, but he can see how the American political system works from where he stands, okay? I thought it was a very very, very penetrating insight. And I, again, encourage everybody to watch these. Well, sorry, getting ahead of myself. All right.
Yeah, well, it may just depend on how you use the word Jewish. For instance, if we use the term Christian coalition, we know that it doesn't talk about all Christians.
Right.
But yet it's an appropriate word because that's an understood entity.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem with that can be addressed by an author and a scholar named Normal Finkelstein, who has done an awful lot of work about and Mershimer, whatever they are in Harvard. They've done a lot of work about the Jewish lobby and also using the overuse of the word having somebody being called an anti-Semite. That is all a design. That's all by plot, plan, design. And so James, when you use any Christian words, you don't have an entity that has been out there really doing this tremendous preconditioning work that we've had to live with for decades now, which is if you don't say the right words about Israel, Zionists, Jews, or Jewish Americans, if you don't use the exact right words, okay?
Yeah, and we don't have an entity that's been through programs either.
I'm not saying what's right or wrong or whatever. I'm just simply saying that the lay of the land is that when you talk about Israel, Zionists, Jewish people, or American Jews, you're opening yourself up to a conditioned response that has been long deliberately established. And Finkelstein just outs this completely.
Absolutely.
And,
what's the name of that film made by an Israeli filmmaker that addresses that very question and ridicules the overuse of calling people anti-Semites? I can't remember the name of the film.
I don't know.
Is it The Invention of the Jewish People?
No. It's kind of a comedy, but he really got slapped down for doing it.
Don't want that story out, and they don't want out what Ken talked about and about what this fella Kuala Lumpur talked about.
Right.
But I'm a political maven. I lived in New Hampshire for 30 years, so I understand full well the primary process and the whole deal. Mm-hmm. So I've known this for 20, 30 years. There's just no doubt about how this country is pretty much run. Split them 50-50, mm-hmm. and then you have a 4%, 8% group of people in Congress that steers them all.
That's
pretty simple.
Very interesting, yeah.
Okay, any other comments on this question? Okay, it's we're really getting close to our closing time, so let's move on to the last issue here, which is the recent, in fact, I think it just occurred last week, if I'm not mistaken, the 9/11 revisited international, I don't know if it was called a tribunal or whatever it was called, but it was certainly a gathering of the usual suspects, and they outdid themselves in a lot of ways. Cynthia McKinney was on top of her act, despite having been exhausted by 36 hours of travel, and some other visiting dignitaries who I was less familiar with and cannot name, who also, and including the moderator, who was extremely eloquent and to the point. And I think the recommendations that they are making make this compelling viewing for everybody, because they are talking about, well, first of all, it represents an internationalization of the 9/11 truth movement that's beyond what was done in Toronto and Vancouver. And secondly, they are talking about setting up a permanent international commission. So I think it's important that all of us become familiar with the testimony given there and the follow-up recommendations. I guess it was sponsored by a group called the I won't get this right, but it's something like Pendala or something like that. It's a peace organization out of Malaysia that I think has international reach, and they sponsored this. And it's interesting to see how it dovetailed with other issues. The woman from India, who was one of the panelists, you know, connected 9/11 with the lack of, you know, progressive movement in the world worldwide, and of course everybody connected it with the lack of peace. So it's really, I think, something that everybody needs to be tuned into. I sent out the links to the listserv, but I would hope that we can also get them into our minutes so that everybody else gets a chance to familiarize themselves with the content of that conference. Anybody else?
Robin? I started to watch it.
Robin, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm working my way through it and have the same point of view. The conference itself is called International Conference on 9/11 Revisited, Seeking the Truth. And what I will say to you on that dovetails into my earlier subject is clearly we're having more international support have internal support in this country. That's because bombs them, and they don't like that. So it's much more open in other countries because they don't have censored news, which we have, look at Israel differently. So they're unafraid. And the third point is that if we slowly keep at this, and part of my reason to be honest about dancing Israelis and Mossad's involvement is because if we gain the trust of Islam or the Muslim communities, then that's going to be a very large contingent of citizens in the world and eventually within this country who will be our advocates. And so that makes two, I think, important groups that I see where things will move ahead internationally. Certainly the Muslim world, okay? And then internally, I think that Dwayne is sitting on the solution in this country if it comes about, and that is that there'll be that who will help us domestically is going to be the United States military, the good soldiers who stand up and say, no, no, this is not acceptable. So, I'm very optimistic. I just think we have to keep telling the truth. And this Kuala Lumpur thing is wonderful.
Yep, it's a real shot in the arm, for what it's worth. Any other comments or questions about that? Okay, then. I think we're at the end of our hour and a half, so if there's no further comment on that, we will close and remind everybody that our next meeting is the day after Christmas. Hopefully you can all be here for it, and we'll see you then.
Okay. Thank you, Ken.
Ken, Robin, just thanks so much for this compilation DVD. You really... you've been awesome. Thanks.
Okay.